The revitalized Roman Empire will ultimately be led by one man, and that, my friends, is still in our future. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
As I mentioned at the introduction, one man is going to lead the Roman Empire. But what's interesting is there will be 10 kings that are given the opportunity to rule as well. Why is there this reference in various portions of Scripture? Daniel 7, Revelation 13, about 10 horns. Well, these 10 horns represent 10 leaders who will initially control the final phase of the fourth beast in its revitalized form. And as I mentioned initially and previously on other episodes, this phase of the Roman Empire or the fourth beast is still in our future. Now, from those 10 leaders, kings, the Bible calls them, the Antichrist will rise and will subdue. And most conservative scholars believe the word subdue means to kill, to get rid of, to uproot. So he's going to subdue three of those kings, three of those leaders. And he was the 11th because we originally had the 10 kings. The Antichrist kind of rises up among them, but is not one of them. So that makes him the 11th. He's the one rising up out of the 10, but not part of the 10. He kills three, then becomes the imperial ruler. He is then, after the killings, the 8th out of the 7 remaining. And you can read about that in Revelation 17. Now, the Roman Empire, though it appears to have died in history after a very, very long existence and reign, will be resurrected. And I believe that that's happening now and will ultimately have one ruler over all. This all will include the entire world because we're talking about the world as it is in today. In today's time, it's not simply going to be Europe or Asia or some known world that the Bible often refers to. The Antichrist will rule the entire world, and this has never been accomplished before at any point in history. Leaders ruled the then known world, but not the entire world. And while the Antichrist is certainly going to concentrate his efforts in specific areas of the world, mainly Europe and the Middle East and Asia, certainly the control that he wields will extend to the entire world. Now, only the Antichrist will be given absolute power to control the entire world. And this is part of God's plan. He will be the final ruler of the globe prior to the return of Jesus. Now, it's ironic to consider the fact that in 2014, we are moving toward a time when one person will rule the entire world. We're hearing a lot about that in the form of a new world coming, a new world order, a one world system, a one global system, a one world company. And that is going to be controlled not by a committee, although the committee of 10 kings will do it first, but it will ultimately be controlled by one individual. And God will allow Satan to place his spiritual son, the Antichrist, in that position of authority. Now, we also notice, of course, that each of the previous empires, and I've mentioned this before, that occurred before the Roman Empire, though having been conquered, really did not completely cease to exist. And we can read about that in Revelation 13. And we also get a glimpse of that in Daniel 7. It's a very important point that we need to keep at the forefront as we go through our study. Nothing really died completely. The newly conquered empire from Babylon to the Medo-Persians was absorbed into that new empire that replaced it. So the Medes and the Persians came along, they conquered the Babylonian Empire, and they absorbed much of that kingdom into the Medo-Persian Empire. The newly conquered empire was absorbed, and that empire replaced it. Even though the fourth beast, the Roman Empire, is said to destroy everything that came before it, it still absorbed a good deal. The power and the might of the Roman Empire simply eradicated the memories of previous empires for that period of time to a great degree, although things like language still remained. Alexander the Great from the Grecian Empire introduced Koine Greek to the world. The Romans still had that under its empire. It was part of its empire. The Greek language was still part of the Roman Empire. The common person spoke Koine Greek. Now let's put this in terms of corporations and companies, for instance. That might be easier for us to acknowledge and understand. How often have we read about some corporation taking over a smaller corporation or company? In the process, the larger corporation that has taken over that smaller one usually sends in new management people, don't they? Often the basic employees remain the same, and they may even have to hire more, or they may have to lay some off. But the employees essentially remain the same. It's management that is usually changed over. The old management's gone, and now employees are faced with the uncertainty of what the new managers will expect. Now, most of the time, new management will simply allow that newly acquired company to continue on as normal. Over time, these new managers will begin to inject new thought, new idea, possibly new directions into the newly purchased company. However, it's very rare for the new management to come in, wipe out the entire workforce, and move the smaller company in a completely brand new direction. Why? Because that previous company, the one they bought, has a following. It has a customer base. They don't want to alienate the customers. Now, one of the things I like to talk about is a favorite company of mine. When I was a kid growing up, my favorite company was a company from my youth, and it was called the Aurora Plastics Corporation from the 1960s. They produced some of the best plastic figure models known to kiddom. Frankenstein, Wolfman, Dracula, Batman, Spider-Man, and a host of other figure-style kits, all pumped out in plastic, 1/8 scale. They were complete with bases. They weren't just like dolls on a shelf or action figures. The base, the story was told through the base. And these were made available to kids my age, and we spent hours building and painting these scenes that reminded us of the shows we watched on TV and the comic books we read. Now, eventually, as time went on, Aurora was purchased by Nabisco, the food giant. And as usual, they got rid of the existing management of Aurora and brought their own people in. They made the decisions as to how the company was to be run, and in general allowed things to continue pretty much as they had when Aurora owned the company. However, when the first controversy arose from some of the model kits that the company was producing, well, the executives of the new company had to make a decision. And what they did was they canceled that particular line of model kits. This was the 1970s and society was changing. Nabisco was basically a food company. They didn't want the negative publicity from protesters who thought that the Aurora models were too violent or too sexist. Now, over time, Nabisco refined and even redefined Aurora so that models once sold by the crate previously were being shelved. More toys came out instead of models. Nabisco did things the safe way because of their other brands, but they lost consumers in the process. Now, eventually, the modeling fad began to die out because, things like computer games from Atari were taking place of the models that they used to buy, paint, glue together. Boys didn't want to sit around a workbench smelling glue and painting models anymore. Computer games were more fun. Instant gratification. But even though modeling seemed to die out, it really never did, the molds for those old models were eventually purchased by Revell Monogram Modeling Company when Aurora's assets were sold off by Nabisco. And the molds were put in storage, but eventually saw the light of day again when Revell Monogram began to reissue them under their logo. So what had originally been Aurora models now were reissued by Revell Monogram, and some were even later reissued by a small company called Mobius Models. Now, those of us who modeled when we were boys took notice and bought the reissued kits when we were adults. And once again, the modeling hobby was alive and well. Now, because of it, More companies began producing original figure kits like the old Aurora company had produced. In fact, this opened up a whole new arena. Companies referred to as garage kit companies because the kits were made in someone's garage out of rubber molds and resin instead of plastic also began popping up. They reissued some of the old Aurora kits and also produced their own by hiring sculptors to create new models based on the style of the old Aurora kits. From this, magazines dedicated to the craft of building and painting figure models came into being, and from there, garage kit expos began popping up all over the country. Though Aurora Plastics Corporation had died, figure kits continued. Now, the figure kit market also expanded greatly, then waned again after roughly another 10 or 15 years. However, figure kits can still be purchased today from a number of smaller companies. And the figure kits are produced in high-grade plastic and are along the lines of the quality of kits that Aurora Plastics Corporation used to produce. Now, since Aurora issued figure model kits in the early 1960s and actually the late 50s, things have gone full circle, and now, roughly 50 years later, figure kits are still being produced by other companies that took their cue from Aurora. So in essence, though the Aurora Plastics Company went through several changes on its own, it was eventually bought by another company and then its assets sold. However, as noted, Aurora continues to kind of live, doesn't it, through other companies today that are doing the exact same thing that Aurora used to do where figure kits are concerned. So it's the same principle when any company buys another company. It's also true when an empire is considered by another empire in history, or when another empire comes in and they think about what they're going to do here, and then they wind up conquering another empire. All the remnants of that conquered empire are not necessarily eradicated by the new empire. Bits and pieces are kept alive by the leaders and rulers of that new empire that has absorbed the previous or possibly the smaller empire. They never start from scratch. And many aspects of a conquered empire are kept intact and become part of the new empire. It's just the way things work in the world. But one of the ways that we can kind of prove this, or at least discuss this more in detail so that it makes sense, is by talking about the geography of these empires. We can talk about it because of the same geography that these empires base their empire upon. And we're going to be talking about that more next time, but let's just give a basic introduction. In order to make our point from what we've been talking about even more clear, let's take a few moments to look at the geographical areas of several empires that led up to and even included the Roman Empire. If you're like me, seeing a visual is always more effective because it not only helps me remember something, but it does so because it makes a greater impact on my brain. Maybe you're like that. Maybe you're a visual learner as well. Few people are not. Most are. So I would encourage you, by the way, if you want to see more about Rome rising, if you want to see the charts I've created and learn more about the Roman Empire and the final phase of the Roman Empire, I would encourage you to get my book. It's called Rome Rising. And we don't cover everything in that book in these radio messages, so there's much more for you to grasp in the book. But if we start with Babylon, the empire that Nebuchadnezzar built, with God's permission, of course, we can clearly see the extent of that empire. And since a huge mountain range was in the way from getting to the Jerusalem, Judea, Israel area, this required Nebuchadnezzar to go up north first and then south to get to Jerusalem. He couldn't go directly from the east because of that mountain. But he made several trips back and forth to Jerusalem from Babylon during these raids against Jerusalem. And over the course of time, he also took many artifacts. Now, we're going to talk about this, as I said, more next time. We want to talk about the geography of these empires, and we're going to find out that they're basically the same. But thanks for joining me today, and until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.